So it's the second week of spring practice, but we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour. I am your host, Will Bazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys are listening to the Hornscast channel, which you can catch on any podcasting platform out there. Today, we're going to be going over Texas in the NIT overtime win over Xavier. They're now into the not-so-elite eight and probably and taking on Colorado in the next round to get to the final four of the NIT. But also, we're going to talk about what we would do if we were CDC, what we'd be looking for in the next coach, and why or why not it would be better. Basically, what would we lose if we lost Shaka Smart? What would we gain with a new guy? That's the idea. But we're going to start off, like we always start off, with pretend you're getting to know us. And also, always welcome fans to join us. We love it. I love it, personally, to see y'all's reactions or y'all's answers to these questions. But this week's pretend you're getting to know us is pretend we're football. That's us. We now own an NBA team. What is the name of that team? Where do they play? And how do they make it to the finals? So here's how we're going to do this. Each of us is going to give the name and where the team is from in the beginning of the answer. And then we're all going to answer how we make it to the finals. So who wants to start off here? Tim, you want to go since you went last time?
So our location is Cedar Rapids. The team name is, from what I understand, regular exercise counteracts the long-term effects of alcohol on the body.
Wow. He is pulling deep for pretend we're football lore. Deep. That is a, wow, that's a blast of the past, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So again, Cedar
is
Rapids.
Is that going to be an acronym across the front of the jersey?
Something like that. And again, Cedar Rapids, team name is, from what I understand, regular exercise counteracts the long-term effects of alcohol on the body.
From what?
FWIURECTLTEOAOTB.
Antetokounmpo.
Fire Ectal T-O-I-O-T-B.
Nice. It's all gonna be the front of the jersey too.
It just rolls off the tongue, honestly.
60 size 60 font Comic Sans of that all the way along the front of the jersey. And maybe like on the side and back as well.
So. I love it.
Yeah. Sponsored by Al-Anon or something like that. Like that'll be our sponsor on the top left breast.
Who's Al-Anon?
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
You might want to look that up, Will.
Yeah.
You probably might want to look that in. I need it.
All right. Johnny, what about you? What's your team name?
So my team name is the Frisco Farts. It's the Frisco Farts. That's right. I want it in Frisco so that it's a close drive, for starters.
Make personnel decisions, by God.
It overwhelms the G League team, the Texas Legends. It also siphons money away from Mark Cuban, which is like a double bonus. So like I'm really I'm mainly here just to try and make him a part of the 2-comma club instead of the 3-comma club. That's really what this is about.
Okay.
So the Frisco Farts. And the jersey is just going to be like a brown cloud.
What are the colors here? Hold up. Tim, what are the colors for you?
Oh, I don't even know at all. I suppose probably some type of,
imagine red and yellow for you.
Yeah, so, I mean, I talked to my doctor about this, and apparently it has like nothing to do with how like dark your urine is. It has to do with how cloudy your urine is. So like probably off yellow with some like oddly discomforting kind of white clouds.
Johnny, what color is your team?
It's definitely going to be a brown jersey.
Okay.
Like the main jersey will be like a gray with a brown cloud. The alternate will be brown with a gray cloud.
No, I feel like they should be like some kind of color underneath, and then like just like throw brown on it.
It's not the It's not the Frisco diarrhea, man. We got to keep with the theme here. It's a fart.
It's a fart.
It's just cloudy. Methane, like, it's going to be... No, it's
methane's not brown. There's nothing brown about methane.
So well, it's just a clear, jersey. It's transparent. To keep with the theme of a fart, it's just it's transparent.
You just see, it's lightly brown.
It's a light brown transparency.
We're gonna see a lot of player nipples, I guess, is what we're getting at.
And once they get wet from sweat, good. No, thank you.
That's when we turn the AC down. It's gonna be a diamond cutting club up here.
William.
Okay. So I kind of cheated with mine because Seattle got screwed.
Did you
screwed.
Also name it the Frisco Farts?
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it was. No.
Okay.
Seattle got screwed, right, by the NBA. Like hard screw, like a no pity going and dry type of screw. I feel like they deserve a team. They definitely deserve a team. So I'm going to go
Your
with the Seattle
wife.
Team. And it also helps out that they're also getting an NHL team, and that Reddit so happened to have a big thread where they went through and suggested team names to help out David Bonderman and Jerry Bruckheimer to choose the team name.
Oh, God. Is it going to be a Con Air team? Is that what this is going to be?
Yeah. No. The best team name out there, and it makes sense. It's a really, if you think about it, it really makes sense because Seattle, it's a port town. Right? So there's a lot of water, a lot of ships. I mean, I remember when I went to go out to Seattle, when I visited, we took a ferry boat over to the national park. It was wonderful. And you know what was aboard that ferry boat? Seamen. So the Seattle Seamen would be the team name that I would choose for Seattle, just barely beat out by the Seattle Battle Cattle. So... I think the Seattle Seamen is just a wonderful name. It rolls off the tongue. It makes sense for the region.
It actually kind of sticks to the tongue. But go ahead.
Globular.
No, if you get it wet, it's the team. It kind of sticks, but definitely the Seattle Seamen is just spot on team name. And I
have to bring Nick Collison back.
Yeah. Do I need to ask what the color of the jersey is?
No, you don't. So. Okay.
It's not blue.
It's not blue. Well, maybe.
What if it starts like green, but when you really work it, it turns white?
No. They're white. They have. It's obviously starts with white, but it's little. It's wait. Listen. It's it's sailor outfits, but very skimpy sailor outfits.
They've got to be like hypercolor then, right? Like the Genera hypercolor shirts, like where they're one thing, but then when you get warm, then they're another color.
Oh, you mean the fraternity sexual assault shirts? Yes.
Oh, I don't know about that. That you're boy.
I don't know about that either, but
I didn't go Greek, Johnny. That's weird.
You did what I came over.
So Tim. Tim.
Yes.
How does the Cedar Rapids,
from what I understand, regular exercise counteracts the long-term effects of alcohol on the body.
How does that make the finals?
It.
Them. How do they make the finals?
No, it.
It.
Yeah, they have it.
Oh, they have quote-unquote it.
It, yes.
Okay. Do you know what it is?
No one does.
They just have it.
Yes, but they've got it in spades.
Okay.
It. Yeah.
What a wonderful answer. Johnny, how does the Frisco Farts, how do they make the NBA finals?
Honestly, they never will. Who's going to play for the Farts?
Oh, he's fucking with the game. What a cut.
Like really, like, here's the thing. I'm not in this to make the finals. I'm in this to bankrupt Mark Cuban. So
that is your finals.
Yeah, the finals will be Mark Cuban having to sell the Mavs because he's too far in debt. Like, and then maybe I'll just like put whatever statue they make of Dirk up in front of the Frisco Farts. Like, I'll get that in foreclosure and I'll wheel it up to the Frisco Farts arena and put it out there and be like, he never played here, but I like the statue. So that's really what mine is. It's not about making the finals. It's just spite.
Just spite.
Yeah.
You know, I hear one thing I'm going
to, I mean, can you imagine trying to get NBA free agents to a team called the Farts.
Oh yeah,
like,
dude.
You're gonna have to really sell it.
That would be my first place to go if I was an NBA free agent.
I just want to hear like Jeff Van Gundy have to talk about the Farts for 10 minutes. Like, I really just want to, like, here, I will compile just terabytes of audio of various serious announcers having to talk about the Farts.
No, so here's the thing. Here's how you make the Frisco Farts a legitimate team. It's a longer word, right? But like how, like, the Cardinals are reduced down to the Cards, or the Mavericks are reduced down to the Mavs.
So are they the Fartinals?
Yeah, sure. I don't know.
I really want, okay,
it's go Farts.
We have to immediately institute a G League team called the Shits. Because if you don't pay attention to the Farts, you're gonna get the Shits.
You're gonna get the Shits. Yeah.
Yeah.
If the Farts, if you can't stop the Farts, you're gonna get the Shits.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And if you're over 40, you never trust the Farts.
Okay, so I didn't really think about how the Seamen were going to make the finals. Probably through a lot of hard work.
Vigorously.
Yeah, vigorously was a way I was thinking about the Seamen making to the finals. Some sweat, maybe some blood, maybe some tears.
Definitely tears.
There's always tears. Yeah, you're right. There's always tears when you get to the finals, that's for sure. It'll be a nice conclusion to the season.
The happy ending?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
The finals were in February, as far as the Seattle Seamen knew. I was told that this was fine.
Oh, they always arrive before you want them to. That's for sure.
They think here the season is 54 games long.
That's right. So, all right, yeah. Ben.
The Seattle Seamen make the finals before everybody else does. So let's go ahead and get on to some actual basketball talk here. So we now know how our fictional teams, quote unquote fictional, they will become something once we have the money acquired through the podcast to buy a team. We'll have to mix something up from all the names, which will be interesting. The Farts even. Oh man, that's childish. But we know how they're gonna make the finals. How does Texas make the NIT finals? They just beat Xavier, and they're going to be playing Colorado. How does Texas going to make the finals of the NIT? We'll start off, though, with our thoughts on the Xavier game. The Xavier win in exciting, quote-unquote exciting, finish against Xavier, where Xavier got the ball back with 1 second left in the overtime and rimmed out. What are your thoughts on that game, just in general?
So I thought the Xavier game was indicative of a lot of the things that we have struggled with throughout the season to do consistently. What really stuck out to me watching the game a couple of times yesterday was a little bit twofold. The first is that was one of the better games that we've had all season as far as the ratio of shots. We took 40 shots inside the arc. We took 23 three-pointers. We took 25 free throws. That is huge for us. In the games that we've been able to kind of take care of our ratios in a way that, like, okay, we're taking smart shots. We're not overutilizing one thing over another. That's really helped us. And certainly when we've got to the free throw line a lot, that's been a harbinger for success for us. So I was very impressed that in a tough game against a Xavier team that's pretty doggone good, we were able to manufacture some good ratios from that standpoint. Because that just, when you can do that, that showcases, an intelligence, a basketball IQ, kind of following a game plan that's important for us at this point of the season. Particularly when you consider how young we played yesterday. I think that Texas played something like 70% or more of their minutes were freshman or sophomore. So they had young guys that were playing intelligently. That was really good. The other side of it that I think was super important is that this is another close game they've won against a quality opponent. So if there's one thing in particular that really stands out about Shaka's tenure here at Texas, it's that more often than not, from one season to the next, we just don't win enough close games. And they did in this one. Now, did we win it? Did Xavier lose it? That's certainly a valuable question, but I was impressed that he got that, or that we got that win in that fashion.
Now, Tim, I'm going to challenge one point in this. I'm not going to turn my nose up at a close win for Texas, but I will question how quality of an opponent is Xavier in the NIT compared to teams that Texas has played in the season. How quality is this win actually? Because that's a question, you know, as soon as you said, I was like,
Yeah, well, they were third in the Big East as far as like their schedule, just throughout the regular season slate. They were third in the Big East. They took Villanova to overtime in, I believe, the semifinals of the Big East tournament. They struggled mightily at the beginning of the year, as you might imagine. They were a one seed last year in the NCAA tournament, and they lost four seniors and one junior to going pro. So they had to
coach.
Yeah, so they had to completely recreate their entire starting roster, and that took some time for them. But if you look at their schedule, they played much better towards the end of the season, and then they came to Texas, and Texas won. So they're in the NIT for a reason, the same reason that we are, right? They just didn't do enough to prove that they belonged, even though if you stack up their personnel and rosters and what they're capable of doing, just like with ours, they did belong from a talent perspective. But you know, I think people who would just look at the fact, oh, they were 19-15, oh, they didn't make the tournament, you would probably say they're not super quality. But if you watch that game, they've got some guys. They've got some guys who can really play. And I was impressed with the fact that, you know, any win at this point in the season we'll take as a positive. But I actually did feel like holding on to that win was a good thing for us. If for no other reason than the fact that it sort of means that we care, which is good, because the people who are holding out hope that Shaka is going to return, that he can get his shit figured out, that this team is going to have a chance. One of the big things that they're holding on to is this team always cares. They seem to always, even when their backs are up against the wall, they give a shit. And holding on to this game, because they could have folded against South Dakota State, they didn't. They could have folded against Xavier, they didn't. So I wouldn't say they played brilliantly the last 10 minutes of the game against Xavier, but they did enough to win, and they're moving on.
Yeah, I'd put them somewhere between Arkansas and Oklahoma State, if we're sort of quantifying where they're at. Their KenPom ranking is 65-ish right now, which puts them slightly below where Arkansas was when Texas went to overtime against Arkansas early in the season. They're slightly better than Providence was when Providence beat Texas. So, you know, if we're looking for incremental gains, then there's that. And it's, you know, when you look at what Xavier brings and sort of the problems that they can present for a team like Texas with the two bigs that they brought in, it's a good win because it's a win. I mean, at this point, honestly, any win is a good win because they need it. They need sort of the positive mojo going forward. They need to string together some wins for the future. But it was also good because, as Tim said, you saw good production out of players that are not gone next year. In other words, not Roach, not Osakowski. I mean, not that Roach played poorly, but Febbers played well, Ramey played well. Coleman played decently in his way. I mean, he was definitely a tertiary guy. Febbers played well. So
Sims. And
Sims, yeah, Sims definitely played well. If you were constructing a team for next year of guys who were play who you want to see take that step or regain form that they might have lost earlier in the year, those are guys you want to see play well.
Let's talk about this interesting thing that happened during this game, which was a four-guard lineup where we had Ramey, Febres, Coleman, and Roach out on the floor. Are we going to be seeing that more against a team like Colorado? Are we going to see that more later on in the tournament? Is that just a thing against for Xavier? Did you like it in general?
I like it if they can rebound as well as they did against Xavier. So I think that Roach had 8 rebounds overall. Ramey had 8 rebounds overall. I think Sims had 7. Febres had 4, I want to say. Osakowski only had 2. I think Ham had 1 or maybe 2. Anyways,
Dylan had 5.
He had 5 rebounds? Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. So yeah, I think if Texas is going to gang rebound defensively like they did against Xavier, that's a very positive thing as they move into the Colorado game, because Colorado's got some length. They've got some athleticism down low. They got some girth down low with that. Is Gat, can I want to say his name is? That'll be interesting. And I'll be frank. If you had told me a few days ago that Texas was going to play four guards against Xavier, I'd have said, okay, well, we're going to be in the glass by 15 because Xavier is a very good offensive rebounding team, and yet we held our own. I want to say we out-offensive rebounded them, which was pretty cool.
12 to 10.
So, yeah, I mean, not huge, but enough that it made a difference. I mean, that Roach didn't exactly make the most of it, but that Sims kick out rebound to him to get him foul shots number 3 and 4 that he then missed was important. But but yeah, I think moving forward, and we'll talk more about lineup and personnel and roster stuff as we get into the later parts of the show. But you sort of hope or think or whatever that it would be pretty easy to slot Andrew Jones next year into the Kerwin Roach role, where he's a guy that has had some experience at Texas and certainly physically, lengthwise, can maybe do some comparable things. Now, that's I hope that's not too pie in the sky, given what we know about his physical history here, but you, at the very least, you can understand that when he was at his peak, he would fill into that spot pretty easily.
If he Texas, would be a better version.
Yeah, I sure hope so. if Texas has that, if you know, going to a four guard lineup is a lot easier when you go 6'2", 6'4", 6'4", 6'5", you know, and that's it's doable when you can have the explosive athletes that Texas sort of does. And I like that we not only did they see that, but they saw that Shaka stuck with that decision making in some crunch time against, you know, in a do or die situation. So you like it because it gets your best shooters on the floor. You like it because it's going to help spacing. You like it because those players are pretty good, so they're going to kind of understand some of that subtle movement if someone else is doing ball screens. You like it because it puts Jericho in a very simple understanding of, like, this is exactly my role. You like it because you know, for a number of reasons, because you have good three-point shooters on the floor. So there's a lot of things to like about it if we can defend well and if we can rebound well. And I thought we did actually a better job of defending with four guards on the floor than we did with any of Dylan, Ham, or Hepa on the floor. And we rebounded pretty well from those spots. So when that happens, pretty good things.
And I think one of the sort of unintended consequences of having having Jackson Hayes not on the floor is that, I mean, Hayes, for all his size and all his length, is not a good rebounder. He's just not. Like, he may become a good to above average rebounder a couple of years from now in the NBA, but right now, that's just not his strength. And Sims, for his other limitations, is a good rebounder. And having Sims on the floor in place of Hayes, he becomes a good enough rebounder relative to what Hayes did that Osakowski doesn't have to try and snag 12 rebounds a game to make a difference, you know, to sort of make up for what Hayes didn't do. So you can, to some extent, roll the dice with a four-guard lineup, especially if Ramey is attacking the glass the way he did, if Febres is attacking the glass the way he did, if Roach is attacking the glass the way he did. If those guys are as active on rebounds as they were in this game, that four-guard lineup becomes a lot more tenable because they start grabbing rebounds and creating second-chance opportunities or ending the other team's offensive possessions that weren't necessarily there before. So the four-guard lineup can make a lot of sense when you get some guys that are sort of covering for the weaknesses that would be there with two traditional bigs. Like, as much as I like Hayes, as much as he was good at the things he was good at, he was very good at. Rebounding was not one of them. And so Osakowski had to be out there a lot more with him because Texas needed to grab a rebound at some point in the game, and Hayes just frankly didn't do much of it. And so with Sims out there or with Osakowski out there as the five, that four guard lineup can become very interesting, and it can become a lot more plausible because, or I should say, if some of the bigger guards or the wings start going after rebounds. Like Liddell, he doesn't really have an offensive game at this point at the D1 level, but he went out there, hustled, grabbed a couple rebounds. Like he went and got balls. Like that's the kind of effort you need from other people if you were going to run that four guard lineup.
To have that four guard lineup, you need to have Roach on the floor. But he's been coming off the bench, and Johnny, you were a proponent of just keeping him on the bench, but he's been very good off the bench so far. How would you continue to use Roach? Is it do you actually now put him in the starting five, or do you continue to have him on the bench?
I kind of like him off the bench. This last game, the game before, he was still sort of, I don't know, acclimating to the sixth man-ish role. He had moments, some good, some not good. Although I guess every game with Roach, they're going to be some good, some not so good. But the game against Xavier, he seemed to really ride the line of using his athleticism for more good than bad. I mean, he still ended up with half of the team's turnovers on the night, so it's not like he was flawless. But I'm in favor of him coming off the bench like he did, because if he comes off the bench, he becomes the sixth man instead of Febres, and maybe he actually starts taking some of Eli's minutes, in which case, you know, that's a net positive most games. I mean, I like the way he was used in Xavier, and I think that is a very plausible way forward for him.
I'd agree with that, and I think that when you bring him off the bench, what it does a little bit is it's felt a lot of times when he's really been at his worst, or when he's had his toughest games for us, it's been moments where he loses focus, or it's been moments where he's pushed the issue when it's not there, or it's been moments where he's just kind of gotten himself out of control in a way that you're like, what are you doing, man? Just get your shit together. And, you know, it's not a cure-all, but when you bring him off the bench, it gives him some time to absorb what's going on in the game a little bit, see how they're defending the ball screen, see how, you know, how they look against rim runs, see how they are kind of how much space they're going to give you if you want to pull up. And I don't mind him getting a 2 or 3 minute look at the beginning of each half of, all right, here are the adjustments they're making. Here's how they're going to approach their, defensing him or defensing the team. So that's good. And like Johnny said, I think it makes sense to have a Coleman, Ramey, Febris backcourt at the beginning of each half, because you have two guys who can really attack the lane. You have Febris, who is obviously a very capable shooter, and there's been, I want to say, it feels like 3 or 4 games in a row where Febris as a 3-point shooter has stopped a run where it's looked like the other team was going to go on a run. I want to say that the first 5 minutes or so, or the first 3 minutes of the second half against Xavier goes on a run and either takes the lead or gets within one after being down a few, and then Febris hits a three. And it's like, oh, okay, well, we're fine again. And that happened against San Diego or South Dakota State. I think it happened against Kansas as well a little bit. He kept us in there. So I like it. I think so much with Kerwin depends on where's his mind. Is he in the right frame of mind? Is he understanding where he can attack? I like that he only took, I think, 2 3-point shots against Xavier. How many did he take against San Diego or South Dakota State? It wasn't more than just a couple in that one too, I don't think. So I like that he's getting into the lane. I like that he seems to be one of the better ones when he does get on the pick and roll situation of finding Sims for some of those lob dunks. So he
took 6 against South Dakota State.
Oh, that's right. He hit his first two and then missed his next 4. That's right. All right. Yeah. Sorry about that. So anyways, all right. So mixed bag. Such is Kerwin. But no, I thought, If you look at some of his numbers against Xavier, obviously the outliers to the negative are he hit 7 of 15 free throws. He had 5 turnovers. Those are pretty bad. Like, you have to play really well everywhere else to say, yeah, he had a solid game if you have those two numbers. And I think he had a very solid game.
It's sort of the way it works with Roach, that he played well enough and aggressively enough that he got 15 free throw attempts.
Yeah.
And then he fucked it up by only making 7 of them. Like, yeah. It's sort of that is Snoop in a nutshell, is like, did well enough, was aggressive enough to force the issue and make some shots and get a bunch of free throw attempts. And he missed more than half of them.
Right, yeah. And all the way throughout the game, I was like, all right, get to the rim. He did it. Good. Ah, shit.
He went 1-for-2. He went 0-for-2.
That's Curran Roach in a nutshell. Curran Roach in a nutshell. But yeah. I will tell you, one of the things about that game that made me most positive going forward for Texas is Jace Fabris was 17 points and Courtney Ramey was 17 points as well. Both those guys, a year older next year, Jace Fabris is going to become a junior. He's been getting steadily more effective, more consistent throughout the year. Same with Courtney Ramey, as he's gotten adjusted to the speed of the college game. It's just kind of been, you know, it's been like the Dow Jones. There's been some ups and downs, but it's been generally going up. So I'm excited for those guys. Matt Coleman is going to have a lot of help next year. It seems like the guard situation next year, while it seemed to be good this year, is just going to get better next year. I'm hoping to see that play out against Colorado in the next game. But, you know, I'm not a basketball nut like y'all. You know, I like to think I know more than I do. But y'all are the ones who know stuff. So tell me.
If it makes you feel better, I like to think more than I know more than I do as well. So.
Well, that does make me feel better, Johnny. Thank you.
I'm staying quiet on this one.
Tim knows everything.
Tim knows more than we do. That's
just, I mean, hey, you know, when you're in Iowa, you have a lot of time to think.
Yeah, I make only great choices.
So what type of team is Colorado, and what do they do well?
So what they don't do well is shoot threes, which I'm very happy about because, again, that is the number one thing I look
for.
What
were they against Norfolk? Let's see.
I know that on the year they're in about the bottom third of D1 in terms of 3-point make percentage. They're about 260 out of 353. So I'm okay with that. They turn the ball over a lot on offense, and they don't force a lot of turnovers on defense, which helps. They tend to get the ball stolen a lot, which that could work out well with guys like Ozakowski and Ramey and Febres having active hands, Roach having active hands, guys like that. Mm-hmm. In some ways, they're going to be sort of similar to Xavier in that they do most of their work in the paint. They shoot a lot of twos. In fact, they're like bottom 20% in the nation in terms of how many threes they take on average.
And if you want to, on that Xavier note, if you want to take a look at the net rankings in warrennolan.com, you'll see it goes Arkansas 65, Colorado 66, Xavier 67.
Yeah.
And then I think Irvine, who made it to the second round, 68. But that's a different story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what Texas is going to have to deal with is a team that likes to get the ball inside. So in some ways, it's going to be a similar challenge to what they had with Xavier. I don't know that Colorado is quite as solid inside as Xavier was. Like their guys are big, but I don't know that they're sort of the Big East bully ball that Xavier was. Colorado has nobody that shoots better than 36% from three. They got one guy who hasn't played in I don't even know how long that he shot 38%, but he only played 14 games this year, so he's long gone. It's going to be interesting to see. Kind of again, it'll be a little bit of clash of styles in that Texas is guard dependent, whereas Colorado is more big dependent, and so. You could see a lot of the same or a lot of similar wrinkles in the game against Colorado that you did against Xavier.
I haven't watched a ton of them. with the Pac-12, it's not uncommon to catch a game on Saturday night at like the 10 o'clock game where the 8 o'clock one's done. And you're just like, oh, I guess I'll watch what's next. So the TV kind of stays on. What frightens me about this game is that I think they will approach what they're going to do against Texas in a very similar fashion to what you saw from VCU, from Radford, from TCU, from Xavier for most, at least, of the first half when Xavier was playing well, in that they're going to want to control tempo, in that they're going to want to attack the glass, they're going to want to try to get the ball in the paint as much as they can, and they probably will know, because Boyle is a good coach, that you can get Sims into foul trouble, that you can attack Texas on the offensive glass if Texas is not kind of engaged and ready to go. So I'm glad, as Johnny says, that some of those metrics, like other way, as far as like how good or not good they are from the perimeter, the fact that they're hopefully going to give some extra possessions with turning the ball over, that is good. It's, you know, we're kind of as the scorned lover, it's tough to look at this Texas team and say, well, if the game goes tempo-wise the way that Colorado wants, can we stay solid enough to win that? And that'll be an interesting question to see, because the last couple of games we held on for dear life and it worked. Can we go 3-for-3 with that? Do we figure out enough ways to make this a high possession game that we kind of run away with it? I think both of those are possible, but I could also see this being like a 59-56 Colorado win.
Yeah, Colorado plays at a faster tempo than Texas. I mean, they're not blazing, but they're faster than Texas. So it's not going to be the South Dakota State game, but I do think that something closer to what you saw with Xavier is probably, you know, a little more realistic than say a 54-53 type game.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think their numbers suggest that. But I just, if I was Colorado, I would probably not want to get into a high possession game with Texas, even if they have been a little bit higher possession. So we'll see. We'll see what they decide. I would not be surprised if Boyle comes into that game and says, we'd like this to be, you know, in the low 50s. But perhaps I'm mistaken. I hope so. Much more entertaining if it's not in the low 50s.
So then I feel like I know the answer to this next question I have for y'all, at least from Tim. How do you attack this team if you're Shaka Smart? So, Coach Preston, Coach Brashear, what do you do? What do you do for the team to take on Colorado, to exploit their weaknesses and, you know, emphasize Texas's strengths?
The Xavier game to me was an example of the very best off-the-ball movement I have seen from Texas this year. Now, whether that's been something clicking, whether that's the fact that Roach is back and Eli's gone, and we kind of are finally at the point where, or not, Eli's not gone, but he's, you know, he's seen his minutes dwindled. I don't really know why we're seeing movement being that much crisper and cleaner away from the ball. But one other thing I can say, and I kind of tweeted about this on Sunday night, but if you watch Febris and Ramey in the way that they were able to move away from the ball, it was kind of reminiscent for both of them of what I thought made Jacobin so special. Jacobin, from the moment he got to Austin, he was probably either him or Abrams was the best off-ball mover that I had seen in a Longhorn uniform. And it's subtle shit, right? It's like you take a couple steps here or there and you've extended the defense that much further, or you're giving yourself 1.5 seconds time till the defender can get to you, as opposed to 3/4 seconds time. And if you watch Jace in the game against Xavier, there were very few, if any, of his 8 3-point shots where he was not on balance, where he was not square, where he was not moving his body into the basket. And when we can have him and Ramey move that well away from the ball, it puts a huge stress on the defense, because even if Matt or Kerwin are unable to get a great look for themselves in the lane, both of those guys can pretty much get into the paint whenever they want to. And if we have Jace and Courtney moving as well away from the ball as they did against Xavier, we're going to have a lot of options. We need to bottle that up against Colorado, because no matter what the score is, whether you're in the 60s or you're in the 50s, this game I think will probably be pretty close. And the amount of times that we can maximize them hitting threes, them getting some good looks, or maybe even some straight line drives if they can get some of that spacing figured out where they force kind of a tougher recovery if they can do that, that will be good for us. I really think that's the big catalyst for us overall offensively.
Yeah, I think, I mean, one of the, as much as I talked about the similarities between the two, between Xavier and Colorado, I think one of the things to consider, one of the differences to consider is that Colorado this season has been better defensively than Xavier. They've been worse offensively, but they've been better defensively. So I don't know that those three-point looks are going to be as open as they were. I don't know that those rebounds are going to come as easily as they did against Xavier. Not that they came easily, but I feel like they're going to be more difficult because Colorado tends to they value rebounding more than a lot of teams do. So Texas is going to have to really work to get those second chance opportunities. And I don't know if they're going to manage that as well this particular game.
All right, so let's go ahead and move on from the NIT, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to look much further down the road. So when the NIT finishes, we're going to get an answer one way or the other on Shaka Smart. So the question I have, and I think that most fans do, is what are you losing when you lose Shaka Smart, or if you lose Shaka Smart, and what can you gain? What are the positives? What are the pros and cons here? Basically, so if you're Cristo Conte, what are you looking for in the next head coach, and why is it better than what you have in Shaka Smart now, and what would you be potentially losing with losing Shaka Smart? Who wants to take a stab at that one?
So what I will say is that similarly to when it was time for Rick Barnes to move on, the downside of the next hire is greater than the upside. Because as much as people want to consider Shaka a mediocre coach or worse within the Texas realm, and he has underachieved for sure, there are a lot of coaches out there who present much more on the negative side or you know, much more of a downgrade in certain areas than Shaka.
Give me an example. I want something concrete here.
Yeah. So, what I would say is that, it is a lot more likely that the next coach is not as good a recruiter as Shaka has been. He has definitely brought talent to Texas. I don't think many people would dispute that Shaka has brought talent to the 40 acres. So, if I'm Del Conte, And I'm going to be a little selfish here because I don't know that this is what Del Conte is thinking. But what I would like to see is someone who is an offensive-minded head coach. And this is entirely selfish because I have done enough recaps where I'm like, no, but if you think about it, 56 to 54 can be beautiful in its way. and I'd much rather write about a game that was like 83 to 78, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, a normal basketball game.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I guess the thing is, in the Big 12, you are fighting against multiple Hall of Fame coaches, whether it is Bill Self, whether it is Bob Huggins. There's a couple others that may be on their way. You know, if Bruce Weber keeps doing what he's doing for another 20 years, he may work his way in there. Lon Kruger is probably a Hall of Fame head coach. You're going to be fighting some really tough battles. And a lot of these guys are more defensive minded than they are offensive minded. Not that they're inept at the offensive end, but the Big 12 is a defensive dominant league most years. So you're going to have to be a fairly inventive offensive mind to defeat these defenses on a regular basis. And a guy like Fred Hoiberg was able to do that, but he also didn't really do well on the defensive end, which is why he sort of had a ceiling. So I would like to see someone who is able to present a cohesive offensive idea for more than one out of four seasons. I mean, it's not an accident that Neil Berry came on staff and Texas posted one of their most efficient offensive seasons in the last 9 years or so. So the recruiting is big. I also like the, it's not just recruiting, but it is understanding how to balance a roster. Getting a one and done is great. It's something you want because it means you're going to have a high level talent on the team, but you have to have the right infrastructure around them to really accentuate their value, to maximize their value. And like the last two classes Shaka has put together, I really feel are the type of classes that accentuate that sort of super high level talent. So classes like that, and then you snatch a guy who's a one and done here and there and really sort of break it to the next level. But that, I mean, when it comes down to it in college, it's about recruiting. It is about recruiting. And it's also about, it's about fitting it to what you have. And so, and I feel like if we're talking about something that Shaka has not done well, especially in his first couple classes, is that he did not balance the roster in a way that, provided a competitive product every year. Like that 11-1 season was just rough. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's where I'm at. It's like, I want to see somebody who can recruit as well as Shaka, provide a cohesive offense, and still put together a defense that is solid, solid to above average.
And you know, you have two of the three things there with Shaka Smart. It's just that, that second one that you're missing is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
that's
think
where you could potentially get something better.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's sort of the thing with and this is why whether the Shaka era, if the Shaka era ends now, what I'm going to regret is not being able to see what happens next year, because I really feel like if Shaka got that next year, he's on the verge of sort of righting the wrongs of what happened in the first year or two in terms of recruiting. And like, I feel like whoever comes in, if they can maintain this class, assuming Shaka's not here, if they can maintain the current roster and the incoming class, they're going to have a lot to work with. And it's sort of a shame that Shaka will be gone and sort of the fruits of his tree, someone else gets to pick. I don't know. Like, it's just, it sucks, but that's sort of the coaching reality, I guess.
And there's nothing like Charlie Strong's Kansas loss. Well, let me go ahead and back it up. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking the Charlie Strong argument of, oh, what if he has just one more year? But the Kansas loss was what put the dagger, you know, the final nail in the coffin for Charlie Strong.
Right.
Shaka Smart really hasn't had that. I don't think he had a terrible... Radford was a bad loss, but they are still in the top half of the NCAA. Kansas was the worst team in college football.
Yeah, it's more of a death by a thousand cuts rather than a stake to the heart like the Kansas football loss was.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's there's not that one overwhelming just, you know, I mean, what was it, Kent State last year or 2 years ago was a pretty bad loss. Like that one was alarming. But yeah, it's to your point, there's not this one, like there's not this one massive, that's the Kansas football loss. It's, you know, it's just an underwhelming season.
Yeah. Tim, you want to take a stab at it?
I don't know that I would add a whole lot more to it than what Johnny did. Here's a very quick synopsis of why I will have a hard time answering this question, no matter what Johnny said. During Chris Del Conte's time as an athletic director, as the head athletic director of a school, he was at Rice from 2006 to 2009. He was at TCU from 2009 until 2017. He's been here at Texas since. He has hired three head coaches at those two other schools before he got here to Texas. At Rice, he hired Ben Braun, who had been at California and had some success with the Bears, and then was fired. He then hired Trent Johnson to replace, Jim Christian, I want to say his name is. He hired Trent Johnson, who had some success at Stanford, and then left Stanford to go to LSU because he kind of got run out of LSU and fired there. Johnson then went to TCU. after he hired Trent Johnson and Johnson didn't work, he hired Jamie Dixon, who had had some success at Pittsburgh and then was sort of like perennially expected to get rid, to be gotten rid of by Pitt. So when he has hired, he has not, he just simply has not hired a young, up-and-coming, exciting coach. What he has done is he has hired guys who've had some success at other places. He has hired guys who have maybe been well thought of, but also really struggled at their previous stops. And so it's tough for me to even to begin with what I think he would do with this job. Now, I kind of unquestionably think clearly Texas is a way, way, way better job than Rice. I happen to believe it's a much better job than TCU. I suppose thoughtful minds can disagree, but I think it's a much better job than TCU. But we have three examples of him with basketball, of kind of seeing what he values, of what he's looking for in what he's going to do. If he brought in even a better version of any of those three guys to Texas, I would still really question what they would add against what I think the promise and hope that we had with Shaka was going to be, which was a young guy who, as Johnny said, could recruit extremely well, which we've seen kind of play out, but who also maybe could figure things out to possibly be a great one. I don't think anyone had any delusions of grandeur like, oh, well, if Jamie Dixon has the time to figure things out, he could be a great one. Like, that shit's not going to happen. He's a known commodity at this point. So given who I think, it is entirely possible that Del Conte would hire, I think we would stand to probably bring in a very solid, probably veteran coach who will run his program in a way that you can expect them to play hard and be good defensively, but also most likely not stand out for anything spectacular. So I come about this conversation in a way where I have a hard time looking at his prior history and thinking about, oh, well, I wonder if he would bring in Nate Oates from Buffalo, or I mean, it makes a lot of sense for him to bring in Beard. Can he get that job done? Or, oh, well, I really like Buzz Williams. Does Buzz Williams fit the mold of what he would bring in? It's tough to say. So, I think Johnny covered it really well, but my consternation is not just the fact that I am hopeful that Shaka will work, but also stems from the fact that we've got some other examples of we'll see what kind of thing he truly values.
Your history is really fucking depressing, just for the record.
That's what he did.
It's fair. It's entirely fair. Everything you brought up is fair. It's just depressed the shit out of me because I'm like, oh God, we're going to end up with like Billy Kennedy, aren't we?
Paul Westfall, let's go.
A&M's gonna hire Buzz and Texas is gonna go get Trent Johnson. I guess the alternative here is, and if you want to take sort of the optimistic view of this, and Lord knows I am the optimistic one of this group, is that Del Conte has not had the resources, the sort of cachet that he has with the Texas hires. So there is the possibility that he is hired at Rice and TCU in a way that fits those universities. Like,
sure,
he was never going to get a guy like Shaka or Nate Oates or whoever at Rice. And TCU had been so miserable at basketball for so long that Jamie Dixon is a home run for them, really. Like, just being in the NCAA conversation on a yearly basis is a massive upgrade for that school historically. So, I mean, they're not sexy hires in the realm of what Texas wants, but he hasn't hired in this sort of Texas realm before. So maybe he goes above and beyond that. Maybe he doesn't. I mean, it's entirely possible you're right and that Texas ends up with like Johnny Dawkins, who made he did okay with UCF this year, but he's made the NCAA twice in like 11 years between Stanford and UCF. It could end up being a guy like that, which I will not even be whelmed by. But it's God damn it, that is depressing.
Well, I think it goes more to this idea that
this is all Tim's fault.
It wouldn't be a home run hire, but it would be more of a hire that has proven something already. Something that is more stable than it is exciting.
But that's the problem, that they have not. What they have proven is both sides. Who he has brought in have been guys who, anyways, Trent Johnson had proven that he could win at Stanford. He also had proven that he could get his ass kicked at LSU. Yes, Ben Braun had proven that he could win at Cal. He also had proven that he could get his ass kicked at Cal. Yes, you know, Jamie Dixon had proven that he could, you know, have some success. He had also proven he couldn't sustain that success. And clearly, we have to embrace and say over and over how important it is to say Texas is and should be different, right? It should be different than everything else that he's done before. But I can't get past the fact that he didn't look for a young guy to come to Rice. He didn't look at like Bowling Green. He didn't look at whatever kind of like MEAC school or whatever, you know, SoCon school. He went and said, "All right, I'm going to find an older coach who had some success and hope that they can recreate that." And I guess he's 1-for-3 because Braun's winning percentage at Rice was like 32%. Trent Johnson's winning percentage at TCU was terrible. You know, and those are objectively bad hires for those places. So, you know, we'll have to just see.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess when you look at like Rice, for example, I mean, it's easy for me not having a paycheck dependent upon this, but it seems like that's a place where you would you'd be more likely to take a risk because you could have sort of a high upside guy that maybe gets your program a little further on the map. And the fact that he went for I'll call it a safe hire at Rice, just that's deflating. We're going to end up with, I don't know, does Lon Kruger have a younger brother or something? Like, it's just, like, we're going to get the Hurley nobody knows about. I don't know who we're going to get. That sucks, man. Fuck you, Tim.
Yeah, well, that I've been saying for the last few weeks, like, I don't know. I don't know.
it's entirely valid. That's why I'm telling you to go fuck yourself.
Well, I'm sure Crystal Conte will be swayed by the donors who are going to be like, I am not paying a cent for a guy who I'm not immediately excited about. So
yeah, the problem is those guys are going to want Brad Stevens, and he isn't fucking leaving Boston to come to Texas. So, I mean, at a certain point, he's got to go find a guy, whoever it is, that's somewhere in the middle ground, because, you know, you're not getting Coach K, you're not getting Mark Few, you're not getting Brad Stevens. So
but what if we money whip the fuck out of Coach K? God damn, we pay so much money.
If he hires Bruce Weber, I'm quitting this podcast.
70 yeah. mil. 70
no,
mil
we're keeping this podcast, but we're not going to write any more.
Was it that's $700 million over 10 years? Was that Jimbo Fisher's? What am I thinking?
Yeah.
I don't think that's it. I think that's a little bit more than he was paid. But something, $75 million. That was what it was. Not $700 million. $75 million over 10 years.
A&M did not make Jimbo Fisher 0.7 billionaire.
It would have if that's what it took.
If that's what it took, I'm sure it would have happened. But what if we pay Coach K $75 million for 10 years?
That's less than he's making now at Duke.
Texas A&M. Just to do it.
That's a pay cut. That's a pay cut. That would be a pay cut for Coach K. Yeah,
he's making somewhere around $10 million a year.
Coach K.
Like when you figure in all the incentives and all that other stuff. Yeah, Coach K makes a shitload of money.
Oh, he makes $9 million a year. That is a pay cut.
Yeah.
Okay, so 90 mil. So let's go 100 million over 10 years. Okay. All right.
Nope. I feel like he's established in Durham, like that he maybe wouldn't want to leave. I feel like he's real. I don't know, maybe not.
I mean, no, but I hear he's looking at a house here in Austin, or his wife is.
Yeah.
So
Durham is a shithole, by the way. I don't know if you guys have been there. It is a legitimate shithole. It is not a nice town.
I have visited Duke. I wasn't, you know, the campus was nice, but not my,
if you like
not my thing.
Big gray rock slabs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you like big gray rock slabs, then Duke is the place to go. So on that note, though, thank y'all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. But the two guys who are more important to the show, Johnny Brashear. Johnny Brashear, where can we find you, man?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram and Discord. And I'm assuming somewhere else at Bitter White Guy. It's pretty much wherever. That's me.
And
don't create that name like on 4chan or something, because
you can't create
that's definitely
names on
4chan. Not me. Yeah.
I know this.
Okay. All right.
Internet savant
Sweet.
Over here.
Boom.
And Johnny, let's play it. Where in the world is Timothy Preston?
Boop 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 whoop whoop. On Twitter at Inside Texas Hoop, no S, and at InsideTexas.com, we have a fantastic hoops community. Come hang out with us. No weird sexual jaunt fantasies this week. Thank you very much.
And Tim, when you're not on Skype, where can we find you on the basketball court?
Well, lately grading research papers and coaching my tennis team. So, boy. Also, where I probably in the most comfortable on the basketball floor is on the perimeter shooting the J. But I'm even more comfortable going inside, taking into the big boys right
to
there
your
at the rim. Yeah, but that's only out comforted by how
being right in your
I
fucking
am.
Face.
Yeah, right in your fucking face.
You guys can also find us on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean. Spotify, Overcast. I don't know any other ones.
Podbean.
Yeah, that's pretty much all you can find it. That's the only places y'all can find it.
I just go to iTunes or Podbean. Those are my two places I go to. Rate us, though. 5 stars only.
5 stars only.
5 stars only.
5 stars only. But thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.